Hey everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive with us. You know, whether you are prepping for that big law school exam or just satisfying your curiosity, we're going to be unpacking a really fascinating Supreme Court case today.
Yeah.
Bowers v. Hardwick.
This is a big one.
It is a big one.
Yeah.
And even though it's from 1986, it brings up some questions about privacy and individual rights that are still debated, you know, even today.
Oh, absolutely. And I think what's so interesting about Bowers v. Hardwick is that it's not just some, you know, dusty old case in the legal history books. It really raises these questions that are still very much alive today about how the law grapples with changing societal values, you know?
Absolutely. And so before we get into the specifics of this case, can we just like take a step back for a second and just like give our listeners like a super quick roadmap to what a Supreme Court case even, you know, looks like? Because I know there's majority opinions and there's concurring opinions and dissenting opinions. And, and it's easy to get those all mixed up.
Yeah. No, you're right. It can be a little bit of a maze sometimes when you first look at these cases. But I think a helpful way to think about it is this. Every case sort of boils down to this like rule of law, which is basically the main takeaway from the case. And then you've got the issue that's being debated, you know, what is the court actually grappling with? And then, of course, you have the facts of the case, like what actually happened. And then you get into all the fun stuff with the opinions. So you've got the majority opinion.
Right.
You've got concurring opinions where some justices might agree with the outcome, but for slightly different reasons. And then you've got those spicy dissenting opinions where the justices who disagree really get to lay out, you know, why they think the majority got it wrong.
Yeah.
And then finally, there's some analysis, you know, to tie it all together. So we're going to kind of walk through each of those pieces with Bowers v. Hardwick so you can really understand what makes this case so significant.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's start with that rule of law then with Bowers v. Hardwick, because I think from what I remember, this was a pretty controversial one.
Oh, it absolutely was. The court essentially ruled that the Constitution does not confer a fundamental right for homosexuals to engage in sodomy.
Wow.
Which means that states were basically free to criminalize it.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, that does sound pretty harsh, you know, by today's standards. So I guess maybe can you unpack a little bit what the court meant by this whole like fundamental right idea?
Sure.
Yeah.
Why is that so important in this case?
Yeah, that's a really key point. The court was essentially saying that the right to engage in sodomy just wasn't deeply rooted in history or tradition.
Oh.
And it wasn't essential to what they called ordered liberty, which is, you know, their way of saying it's not crucial to a functioning society.
Right.
So this whole reliance on tradition is really interesting because it kind of begs the question of, like, how can the law keep up with, you know, devolving societal values, right? Mm. What happens when these deeply rooted traditions clash with our modern ideas about individual rights?
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a great question. So how did all of this actually play out then in the case itself?
Okay.
What were the facts that led to this decision?
The case revolved around this guy named Michael Hardwick, who was charged in Georgia under their sodomy law. But here's the twist. The district attorney actually chose not to prosecute him.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Hold on. So why did this case even end up going to court if he wasn't actually being prosecuted?
Mm, that's a great question. Hardwick basically decided to challenge the law itself.
Oh?
He was like, this law is unconstitutional and I'm going to fight it, even though they're not coming after me. The lower courts were actually divided on this issue, which is why it eventually went up to the Supreme Court.
Interesting.
And this really shows how legal challenges can happen even when there's no actual prosecution, you know, especially if someone believes the law is just plain wrong.
Yeah. Okay. So at its core, then, the issue here was whether the Constitution protects this right to engage in sodomy, even in private.
Exactly.
It's hard to even imagine that being a question.
I know.
In this day and age.
It really is. It definitely reflects, I think, the social and legal climate of the time. Back in the 1980s, many states still had these sodomy laws in place.
Right.
And a lot of them were rooted in these, you know, centuries-old Judeo-Christian moral beliefs. And even though a good number of states were starting to get rid of these laws, the Supreme Court's decision in Bowers actually kind of went against that trend.
Okay, so let's talk about that majority opinion then.
Yeah.
What was Justice White's reasoning for upholding that Georgia law?
So Justice White, who wrote the majority opinion, really emphasized the whole idea that there's no fundamental right to sodomy anywhere in the Constitution.
Right.
He argued that it wasn't deeply rooted in history or tradition like we talked about.
Right.
And therefore, the state had every right to regulate it.
Okay, I can see how that argument, you know, would be appealing to some people who believe in a really strict interpretation of the Constitution.
Right.
But what about the other justices?
Yeah.
Did any of them have a different perspective on this?
Oh, absolutely. There are a couple of concurring opinions, but it's the dissenting opinions that really offer a stark contrast here.
Okay.
Justice Blackmun, for example, wasn't really buying the majority's focus on the whole sodomy thing. He thought the case was about something much bigger.
Okay.
He called it the right to be let alone.
Interesting. So he was really focusing on that broader right to privacy then.
Exactly. Even if it wasn't specifically spelled out in the Constitution,
right.
He criticized the majority for getting hung up on this one specific act and kind of ignoring the big picture.
Yeah.
You know, the potential harm to individual privacy in a broader sense. And Justice Stevens also had a really powerful dissent.
Okay.
He pointed out that Georgia's law actually outlawed sodomy in general, not just for homosexuals.
Right.
But even though it was written in this gender-neutral way, it was mainly enforced against homosexuals in practice.
Okay, so that sounds like it could lead to some pretty unequal treatment under the law.
Exactly, and that's what Justice Stevens had a problem with. He argued that this selective enforcement raised serious equal protection concerns.
Interesting.
Because if a law is written to apply to everyone, but is only used against a specific group, that could violate the 14th Amendment's guarantee of equal protection.
Okay, so we've got this divided court, this really controversial ruling based on tradition.
Yeah.
Where do we go from here? I mean, did this Bowers decision just stand as the final word on this issue?
Not at all. While Bowers did uphold the state's power to regulate sexual conduct, at least in the short term,
right.
It really sparked a firestorm of debate and legal challenges that eventually led to its downfall. It was overturned in 2003 by Lawrence v. Texas.
Okay, and that is a perfect segue into our next part.
Huh?
So we'll be back to unpack the aftermath of Bowers and how Lawrence v. Texas really changed the legal landscape when it comes to LGBTQ plus rights.
Mm-hmm.
So don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
All right, so we're back, and we just left off talking about the Supreme Court upholding that Georgia sodomy law in Bowers v. Hardwick.
Yeah.
And I imagine that decision had a lot of ripple effects, you know, not just in the legal world, but in society as a whole.
Oh, absolutely. The Bowers decision was a huge deal. I mean, it really set off protests and legal challenges all over the country.
Yeah.
It kind of became this rallying cry for the LGBTQ plus rights movement, you know,
right.
Really highlighting the struggle for equality and recognition under the law.
Yeah, it's honestly hard to believe that something as personal as what consenting adults do in the privacy of their own homes could even be subject to legal scrutiny.
Right. And that's exactly the point that Justice Blackmun was trying to make in his dissent.
Yeah.
Remember, he was talking about this idea of the right to be let alone. And that goes way beyond just specific acts. You know, it really touches on this core principle of individual autonomy and being free from government intrusion in our most private lives.
Yeah, for sure. So beyond just the sodomy laws themselves, were there any other practical consequences that came out of the Bowers decision? I mean, did it impact other areas of law as well?
Unfortunately, yes. The Bowers decision had this really broad impact, and it kind of cast a shadow over a bunch of other legal issues.
Okay.
For example, it kind of emboldened those who held these discriminatory views.
Right.
And it made it harder to fight discrimination in areas like employment and housing and even adoption.
Wow.
You know, because the precedent set by Bowers could be used to justify unequal treatment in all sorts of different situations.
Yeah. It's kind of unsettling to think that a single Supreme Court case could have such a wide-reaching impact on so many people's lives.
It really does. And it underscores how powerful the judiciary is, you know, and how their interpretations of the law can really shape societal norms and people's lived experiences. I mean, Bowers created this climate of fear and stigma for a lot of folks in LGBTQ plus community.
Right.
And it made it that much harder for them to just live openly and have access to the same rights and protections as everyone else.
So we talked earlier about how the court really leaned on tradition and history in their decision.
Right.
Does that reasoning continue to hold up in the years that followed Bowers?
Well, it did for a while, but things change, right?
Mm-hmm.
Both the legal and social landscapes are always evolving. And eventually, the tide started to turn as more people recognized how unjust Bowers really was.
Mm-hmm.
And they started to push for change. You know, legal scholars, activists, and even some lower courts began to question the validity of the whole Bowers decision and the logic behind it.
So even though Bowers was a Supreme Court ruling,
yeah.
It wasn't the end of the story.
Right.
There were still ways to challenge it.
Absolutely.
And push for a different interpretation of the law.
Exactly. And that's where Lawrence v. Texas comes in. This case, which happened in 2003, directly challenged Bowers and ultimately led to it being overturned.
Wow.
It's a really powerful example of how legal precedent, even from the highest court in the land, can be revisited and reversed.
Right.
When it no longer aligns with our values as a society and, yeah, you know, a deeper understanding of what our constitutional rights really mean.
Yeah, for sure. So it sounds like Lawrence v. Texas was a huge moment in the fight for LGBTQ plus rights.
It was.
Can you give us a little preview of what happened in that case?
Sure.
And how it was different from Bowers?
So in Lawrence, the court actually recognized a fundamental right to privacy when it comes to adult consensual sexual intimacy, regardless, yep, of sexual orientation.
Wow.
They basically said Bowers was decided incorrectly, and that the Constitution protects individual liberty when it comes to these really personal choices.
So after like 17 years, Bowers was finally thrown out.
Yeah, pretty much. Lawrence v. Texas was a huge victory for LGBTQ plus rights, but the legacy of Bowers is something we're still dealing with today.
You know, it serves as a stark reminder of how important it is to keep fighting for equality.
Right.
And to keep challenging discriminatory laws.
Absolutely. It's a really powerful reminder that even legal precedents can be flawed.
Yeah.
And that progress sometimes requires us to just keep pushing and challenging the status quo.
It really does.
Before we move on to Lawrence v. Texas in more detail, are there any other lasting impacts from Bowers that you think are important to touch on?
You know, one thing that really stands out to me is how Bowers highlighted the importance of legal and social activism when it comes to creating real change. I mean, the efforts of LGBTQ plus advocates, legal scholars, and just everyday citizens who spoke out against this injustice,
yeah,
all contributed to its eventual downfall.
Yeah.
It shows that even when faced with these seemingly impossible legal obstacles,
right,
change is possible if we keep working for it and stay committed to justice.
That's a great message. So Bowers might have been a setback, but it ultimately galvanized a movement.
And led to that landmark victory in Lawrence v. Texas.
It did.
I'm really excited to hear more about that case,
yeah,
and how it reshaped the legal landscape. So are you ready to dive into part three?
Absolutely. Let's do it. Let's explore how the Supreme Court finally shifted course.
Okay.
And recognize the fundamental right to privacy that was denied in Bowers.
All right. So we've talked about the impact and the legacy of Bowers v. Hardwick. But now I really want to dig into the case that actually overturned it. Lawrence v. Texas.
Yes.
This is where things really start to change for LGBTQ plus rights, right?
Absolutely. Lawrence v. Texas is really a pivotal moment. You know, it marks a turning point in how we view individual privacy, and the courts really start pushing back against state-sanctioned discrimination based on sexual orientation.
Okay. So before we get into all the legal arguments and everything,
sure,
can you just like set the scene for us?
Okay.
What were the facts of the Lawrence case?
So imagine it's 1998 in Houston, Texas. John Lawrence and Tyron Garner are in Lawrence's apartment when police burst in responding to a reported weapons disturbance.
Okay.
And when they get there, they find Lawrence and Garner engaged in consensual private sexual activity.
So I'm guessing this is where that Texas law comes into play.
You got it. Despite there being zero evidence of a weapons disturbance, Lawrence and Garner were arrested and charged under this Texas statute that made it a crime to engage in same-sex sexual conduct.
Wow.
And it's important to remember that this is all happening after Bowers v. Hardwick.
Right.
So at the time, that Texas law was considered perfectly constitutional.
So Lawrence and Garner, they basically became the test case for challenging this type of law.
Exactly. They decided they were going to fight these charges.
Yeah.
They argued that the Texas law violated their 14th Amendment rights to equal protection and due process.
Interesting. So their case goes all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And this sets the stage for this huge legal battle over privacy and individual liberty.
Right.
And really the whole scope of Bowers v. Hardwick.
Right.
So this is where things get interesting.
Yes.
What were the major arguments that were presented before the court?
So the core issue was really whether that Texas law, by criminalizing same-sex intimacy, was infringing on the fundamental right to privacy that's protected by the 14th Amendment.
Okay.
Lawrence and Garner's lawyers argued that the government just has no business regulating what consenting adults do in private.
Right. So they were basically going right at the heart of Bowers and saying the government shouldn't be able to dictate what people do in their own homes as long as it's consensual and doesn't harm anyone else.
Exactly. They argued that Bowers was based on this outdated way of thinking and a flawed understanding of history and tradition. Mm-hmm. You know, they pointed to the fact that social norms were changing and there was this growing understanding that individual autonomy matters,
right,
especially when it comes to personal relationships.
So what about the state of Texas? What were their arguments for keeping that law in place?
Texas argued that the state has a legitimate interest in upholding public morality and traditional values.
Okay.
They said the law wasn't discriminatory because it applied equally to same-sex and opposite-sex couples who engaged in certain sexual acts.
Hmm.
Even though, of course, it was mostly enforced against same-sex couples.
Right. That sounds a lot like the selective enforcement argument that Justice Stevens brought up in his Bowers dissent.
It does.
Did the court address that in Lawrence?
Yes, they did. In a 6-3 decision written by Justice Kennedy, the Supreme Court sided with Lawrence and Garner. They struck down that Texas law and overturned Bowers v. Hardwick.
Wow.
The court recognized a fundamental right to privacy that includes consensual sexual intimacy between adults no matter their sexual orientation.
So that's a huge shift from Bowers.
It is.
Why did the court decide to overturn their own previous decision? What was their reasoning?
The court basically admitted that Bowers was just wrong. They said that the historical reasons used to justify those sodomy laws were flawed and often motivated by prejudice. Yeah. They really emphasized the importance of individual dignity and autonomy, recognizing that intimate relationships are a key part of who we are and our happiness.
So they were saying the government should just stay out of people's personal lives, especially when it comes to relationships and intimacy.
Exactly. Justice Kennedy wrote, "The petitioners are entitled to respect for their private lives. The state cannot demean their existence or control their destiny by making their private sexual conduct a crime."
Wow, what a statement.
Yeah.
So how did the justices who disagreed with the majority opinion respond to this?
Well, the dissenting justices argued that the court was overstepping its authority.
Mm.
They basically said that issues like same-sex intimacy should be left to the states to decide, not the federal courts.
Interesting.
You know, they were standing on the principles of federalism and democratic decision-making.
So even with a groundbreaking decision like Lawrence, there was still this debate about the role of the court and how to balance individual rights with state power. Well, I think Bowers v. Hardwick and Lawrence v. Texas, they really tell a story of how the law can evolve over time.
They do.
And how society progresses.
Yeah.
It's also a powerful reminder that the fight for equality is ongoing.
Right.
You know, it's a reminder that the law is not set in stone.
Yeah.
And it can and should adapt to changing values.
Absolutely.
And a deeper understanding of individual rights.
I completely agree. It's been fascinating to explore these cases with you today.
Likewise.
You know, they really highlight how important it is to keep pushing for justice and to recognize the power of individual privacy and autonomy. And they show how far we've come, but also how much work there's still left to do.
I think that's a great place to wrap up our deep dive into Bowers v. Hardwick and Lawrence v. Texas.
Yeah.
We hope you found this insightful and maybe even a little inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep learning, keep questioning, and let's all keep working towards a more just and equitable world for everyone.